Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for August 10th, 2009, and on this week's episode, Tom Williams interviews Steph Tovar about High Fidelity, the musical. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, and let's talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. We're on Armitage Avenue at local Starbucks, which is becoming one of the places that we like to do interviews. And we have a gentleman who's well known to Chicago, Steph Tovar. Hello, Steph.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. And tell us about High Fidelity. I know you're the star of it. You're one of the producers of it.
Well, the piece kind of came to me because of my association with Michael Mahler. I had done Newt Rockne All-American, which he wrote, and Mike was casting a show for American Theater Company that we were going to move the show. And he's such a talent, so I was looking for a show to replace the show we were moving and trying to find something for Mike Mahler. And I had heard about High Fidelity. I listened to the music, and one of my favorite television shows is Flight of the Conchords, which is an HBO show where the guys are in a band and they sort of break out into these music videos throughout the course of the show. It's hilarious. And High Fidelity centers around the John Cusack role.
From the film.
From the film that runs the record store, but he has his two clerks. And Jack Black was one of the clerks in the movie. Obviously, you know, he did well from that. And I thought, well, why don't we do this show sort of in a Flight of the Conchords way with Mike, who plays several instruments, all the
Mike's
music.
Major talent.
Yeah. So that's where I kind of came up with the idea. And then obviously I had a Rob and me, but I just needed to go out and find a Jack Black, which I think I did more than just that with John Wagner, who's incredible. So that's kind of how it all came to be.
And we give you credit for attempting to do a show that originally in 06 was in New York and was a failed show.
Mm-hmm.
And but as so often happens, regional theater-wise and usually in Chicago, we take failed Broadway shows, do them right, mm-hmm. make some changes, you know, add some scores to it, and make it a hit.
Yeah.
So it sounds like that's the formula you guys are after, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, it's so tough. I mean, world premieres, and I've been part of a lot of them, it's really tough to get a show right the first time. I mean, this is a really good show, and a lot of people don't know that because it didn't last long in New York. But it's not a big show. It's not a big story. And they plugged it into a Broadway musical formula with big sets and a big theater with 1,200 seats. And, you know, that's a lot of pressure. I mean, I'm producing this thing. And it's a lot of pressure on me doing it in a small venue. I can't even imagine what they must have gone through in New York. But this material is really good. I mean, David Lindsay Abaire wrote the book. He's a Pulitzer Prize and
yeah,
a Tony winner.
Yeah, he's terrific. Funny comic. Yeah.
Tom Kitt just won the Tony Award for Best Music for Next to Normal. He wrote the music. And Amanda Green is an incredible lyricist. I mean, this is a good piece that just was plugged into the wrong formula, I think.
Kind of that New York overproducing.
Yeah, and we're taking a simple approach to it, a very concert-like approach to it, and just having a really good time with it, not taking it so seriously, which I think they had to do in New York because the stakes are so high and the money's so huge. So, you know, our first show on an average day, was done in London originally with Woody Harrelson and Kyle MacLachlan. And it failed miserably. I mean, it got horrible reviews. You know, John Crowley directed it, and it did terribly. But they did the same thing. They had it in a big theater. The stakes were really high. They threw a lot of money at it. And we took that show and, you know, in Chicago and came out of the gate with it, and it was a big hit.
Yeah, so it was amazing. I remember, if people don't remember that, it was at the Greenhouse Theater.
Yeah.
And it was the one where you and your, I think it was your brother?
Yep, brother.
You end up in this big fight scene with
yeah.
the garbage all over the
yeah.
place. Yeah,
Johnny Clark, yeah. I mean, you know, so I just think that it's really tough to get a show right the first time. I mean, I have the advantage, we all do, Peter Amster, our director, choreographer, we have the advantage of taking a look at it, you know, from another perspective and giving it another chance. And I just think that that's really important for new work, and especially work of the caliber of these artists. I mean, they're incredible.
So tell us now about the style of music. It's basically a rock? rock musical.
Yeah.
He runs a record. So give us a little bit for those who don't know the story.
Well, if you haven't seen the movie, you should go out and see it because it's just an incredible movie. It's based on a novel by Nick Hornby, and the novel became a cult classic. And then John Cusack took that novel, and he co-wrote the screenplay, and they nailed it.
Yeah.
I mean, the movie is just...
Yeah, I remember.
They set it all in Chicago. So, it's about a guy that owns a record store, and he's in his late 30s. He needs to sort of grow up, and his current girlfriend leaves him, and when she leaves him, he sort of through music, goes back to his past relationships to sort of find out his patterns and where he went wrong. And
that's the character you play?
Yeah, and I play Rob. I play the guy at the record store. So, the music is such where it's really sort of how we're interpreting it. It's the musical is really sort of the soundtrack of Rob's life, like how he would imagine the song, because we all do that. We all like
sure.
In our heads, or when we listen to a song on the radio, we play it like, in reflection of our own lives. And I think that's what the musical is doing, and that's what we do with these songs. And the songs are really, some of them, hilarious, like takeoffs of every genre you can imagine, from Led Zeppelin to Bruce Springsteen to rap. I mean, it's just a
original
lot of
songs, but done in the style.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. So it's just a mishmash of so many different styles, and it's really fun. I mean, and the book is really good too, because it's based on really good source material. And David Lindsay-Abaire, who actually rewrote a scene for our production, has been, he just did an incredible job with it. So I think it's a really strong book too.
Has Cusack signed off on it? Is he coming to see it, do you think?
We're trying, we're trying. Of course, we're inviting him and Joan Cusack, who was also in the movie, to come and see it. And we're actually going to partner with Vintage Vinyl, which is the record store where they shot a lot of the interiors of the movie. The gentleman, he closed it. It used to be on Clark, and he's opened a different record store in Evanston. But we're going to do some partnership with him, and we're trying to get all those guys involved because, the movie is such a cult classic, and especially having it all shot in Chicago, we want to try and capitalize on that as much as possible.
So this is really an original show.
Yeah, it's a very fresh, original take on it. The actors that we've cast in the show, Mike Mahler, John Wagner, who plays Barry, Derek Hosenstab, who plays TMPMITW, which is the most pathetic man in the world, and Jim Barclay. I mean, Jim's really the only, he plays the drums, he's the only sort of non-actor in the show. Everybody else plays all of the instruments. The girl that we have playing the Marie LaSalle, which is the Lisa Bonet character from the movie, she plays the girl that backs her up, her backup singer, accompanies her on the guitar. I mean, it's a really fresh take on the show.
So that's kind of a new trend that Sweeney Todd kind of made work, and now they're doing more of that.
Yeah, we're sort of blending it. I mean, we definitely have book scenes where, but I mean, I would not say it's like a John Doyle interpretation of the show, but it all takes place in a record store. It sort of lends itself to a very rock and roll, like, it's like when you walk in the door, you're going to feel like you're going to a club. I mean, there's a bar in the room where you can get a drink. You're going to sit down. You're going to feel like you're going to a concert. And then at the end of the night, you'll be like, wow, that was actually a really great musical, too. So that's kind of what we're hoping for anyway.
Wow. Sounds like you're really excited about it.
I am. Now that we've sort of come through, producing this thing, it's such a monster. I mean, I've done a two-person show and 2 one-person shows. So going from that to a 14-person show, which is less than they did in New York, they had 19 in New York, and the crew and everybody that's involved, all the marketing, it's just been crazy. Since literally like May of this year, I've been working on this like 8 to 10 hours a day.
I mean,
it's just that you have to. It's that big of a deal.
Well, in the meantime, your Route 66 theater company has had some interesting shows.
Yeah.
The one woman show you just had.
Yeah.
Oh, was that terrific.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm very proud of that.
Tell us about that. Just
well, our first show, which you talked about on Average Day, was two guys, and at the end of the show, they're, beating the crap out of each other, and they're, it's very masculine, and we switched gears, and we did something that was, written by a woman, directed by a woman, starring a woman, and I think Laura Schalhart's a great playwright, and Wendy Whiteside's an incredibly talented actress. It was just a great night of storytelling,
Yeah, it sure was.
And we used that to launch our educational outreach program for the company, which we started at Robert C. Sullivan High School in Rogers Park.
How was the reception for that?
I think the reception was really good. It's a tough show to market. I mean, it's a one-person show, obviously, and in the summertime that no one's ever heard of. So, obviously it wasn't as big of a seller as On an Average Day, but critically it was a hit. It was Jeff recommended.
Yeah,
everybody that came to saw it, told me how much they loved it. And I was really, really proud of the work by not only Wendy and Meredith, but the whole design team. You know,
yeah, because the lighting and the sound worked so much. I made the comment about that. Mm-hmm. I have yet to see a one-person show that depended so much, and the timing was there with the tech operators and with the design.
Yeah,
it really added a lot to it.
Steve Key designed our set. He's an actor that's
Sure.
You know, he's with August Osage County right now. Did an amazing job on the set. Jesse Klug did our lights, and Lindsay Jones, who's won, you know, 4 Jeff Awards, did our sound. I mean, it was like the all-star dream team of designers, and it really coincided with what Wendy was bringing to the table and Laura's play. And Meredith, our director, really tied the whole thing together. I'm really proud of that show.
Well, this is your third show coming up with High Fidelity.
Technically, correct? Our fourth, because we did do one other one-person show that was, we produced it, but Jen Weigel's one-person show is called I'm Spiritual, Damn It. It's based on her book. We did a run of that at the Viaduct Theater at the same time that we were doing it on an average day, because that's how crazy I am. And Jen had a huge success with that show. She brought it to Chicago Center of the Performing Arts, did another run of it, and that's how actually I got hooked up with Tony Tomasca to get the opportunity that we had with High Fidelity, moving it to Tony and Tina's space. So I'm Spiritual Damn It was our second show. KFD was our third. This is our fourth show, and we've only been incorporated for a year and 4 months. So that's
You talk about taking off running.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's a little too crazy. I'd like to plan things a little bit better, but you know, things have been working out so far. Knock on wood. So.
Well, we need an equity company like yours in town. You know, with some fresh blood and yet surround yourself with top pros.
Yeah, I mean that's really the key. I mean, you know, it's not me. It's who I surround myself with, and I have the luxury and fortune enough to surround myself with. I think, you know, the best people in the city to work with, you know, personally and professionally. And, you know, I think it's reflected in our work. And our, you know, our mission is very much to take things back and forth between Chicago and Los Angeles. On an average day, unfortunately, is the only one we've been able to do that with right now. And we actually hope to take that to New York next year. But High Fidelity, you know, depending on how things go here, we absolutely want to take that to LA as well. And, you know, we have a girl from LA that's in the show that's going to help us get it started out there. And, you know, it's we're the only company that I can think of in the country that really has that kind of a mission. It's expensive, but I think it makes us unique.
Well, part of that is your background of going out to L.A.,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
you have a lot of roots
years.
Out there. Yeah,
yeah, and I go back and forth. And, you know, for as much as people sort of dog L.A. and, you know, Chicago's a much better theater town. You know, L.A. really has its merits. And I just think that you just need to produce good theater out there. And I don't think people take the time to really do that. I think they want to put something up to get agents to come and see it.
Yeah, and to sell an actor or an actress,
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And if you just concentrate on doing the play, when we did On an Average Day out there, it was a huge hit because people came in and were like, wow, that was play. We're like, well, yeah, you can do that out there. but you just need somebody from Chicago to sort of have that mentality. Which is what we have.
You take the Chicago mental work ethic and craft and bring it out there.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do. So, you know, been very fortunate.
Well, with High Fidelity, it's how long a show is it? Is it
It's about 2 hours.
About 2 hours, okay.
15-minute intermission. The bar's in the same room as the theater, so you can grab a drink during the show. And actually, if you call the box office, there's a pre-show dinner. You can actually eat before the show.
Wow, that's almost like the old throwback to the old candlelight.
Right, yeah.
Because I saw that Tony D'Angelo and Libby Majors are
he
helping you produce.
Yeah,
he did with Bill Palencia. Yeah.
Yep, yeah, they're great. So and Tony and Libby Majors have been you know, co-producing the show with me and have been invaluable in terms of their advice and their wisdom and how many years they've been in this business. So.
Yeah, I know. I had Tony on for one of these podcasts and little things like he said, well, yeah, I learned a little bit in 300 shows.
Oh, God. It's and he knows about everything. I mean, he's an electrician. He knows about the lights. He knows, I mean, dinner. He knows, you name it, the guys experience it. So it's you know, there's no way I could do this huge of a show all on my own. I've had great advisors. I have Blair Robertson, who's our producing director for Route 66, and Katie Jeep and John Moorline helping me. And, you know, it's just
those are all well-known Chicago names.
That's right. So
from that other group.
Nah, that's right. So yeah, so I've been lucky, but it's really coming together. I'm real excited about it.
And so, give us a little commercial for it. it's running at Piper's Alley.
Piper's Alley, where Tony and Tina got married.
At 1608 North Wells,
corner of North and Wells,
yeah.
On the third floor. You can find out about tickets, everything you need to know. The show has its own website, which is hifichicago.com,
okay.
hifichicago.com. You can get ticket information. You can see video blogs and photos and Yeah, so it's go to the website because it's really exciting. Marty Higginbotham at StageChannel.com.
Oh, yeah, he's tops. Marty's good. Yeah. Any chance of a cast album?
Well, you know,
I know that's expensive,
well,
too. But
Amanda Green, the lyricist for the show, is coming into town next week. They have a new song that they're putting into the show, and
great.
David Lindsay Bear rewrote a scene for it. I mean, the writers are all very excited. They really want to see the show succeed. So, who knows? You know, after we open, we'll see how it goes, and then I'll go back to Gersh Agency and say, hey, can we cut an album and see what they say? Can always ask, right?
Well, and if you guys revive it and make it into a hit show, you gotta have a
we'll
CD.
See. One thing at a time. I just want to open and have the show be great. That's
so what days are you running?
We run Thursday through Sunday. Okay. Thursday at 8, Friday at 8, Saturday we have two shows at 4:30 and 8:30, and we have a Sunday matinee at 3, and we begin performances August 8th, and we open the show on Monday night, August 17th.
Which is a great time to open.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's two schools of thought opening in August. One says it's the worst time of the year to open, but it's also a time where almost nothing else is open.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're coming in right at the tail. Yeah. I mean, Spring Awakenings, you know, that closes on the 14th.
16th, I think, yeah.
So right after they leave town, because they're tough competition, obviously. And it's right before everything opens in the fall.
Right. So you got a chance to get an edge. And,
yeah.
For reviewers, great. There's no conflict.
Right. That's what
we hate that when five openings happen on the same day.
Yeah.
And you want to really help every one of them.
And ours is it's an event. I mean, you can go, you can eat, you can have a drink. The ticket prices are, you know, our top ticket price is $39.50, which for a musical of this caliber and with the biggest cast.
A full equity musical.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, so it's a low ticket price. We really want to just get people to come and see it and have a great time. So.
Well, that's smart marketing. And I love though on one of your promotional pieces, a rock musical about falling in love. Okay, so obviously we know what's going to happen there a little bit. Hating your job.
Right.
Boy, can a lot of people relate to that.
Oh, yeah.
And your all-time top five.
Yep.
Give us a hint of what that means.
Well, throughout the show, you know, Rob, talks to the audience and says, you know, these are my all-time top five. The show starts with him discussing his top five breakups of all time. Okay. His Desert Island all-time top five breakups. And, you know, it's somebody who works in a record store or somebody that loves movies. You're all right, what's your top five films? Or your top five.
That's true. Top five. Yeah, yeah.
So throughout the show is all about the top five, which is actually very funny. And everyone does that. Everyone can relate to a top five. I'm sure they have top fives for everything. So.
Yeah. Oh, that is so cool. Well, it sounds like you're really excited.
Yeah, I am. We're pumped. We're entering our second, a week and a half in on rehearsals. And it's such an amazing cast. And it's just a really fun show, and the material is really good. We're just having a great time.
And you're scheduled to go through October 11th at this point.
At this point.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, we're hopeful, and we'd love to stay open as long as we can. But, October 11th is our schedule closing.
Great. Well, let's go back to a little bit of your background.
Mm-hmm.
Besides On an Average Day, which I thought you were awesome in.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate
what you guys did with Newt Rockne. And you played Newt.
Yeah.
That was a great show. And I told Michael Mahler and Tony, I said, if you get that show to New York, you're going to win Tony for the best musical. It is such
bad.
A good show.
Yeah, and, you know, the critics were really great to it. You were great to it. Chris Jones championed the show, and it just wasn't the right time for that thing to fly, and it's too bad. I really hope it gets another shake because it deserves it. And David Bell did a great job with it. And it's a great story that people can relate to. It's an American icon.
I thought
story.
It was one of the best works that I'd seen you do.
Oh, thank you.
Because he was such an everyman. And
yeah.
You played him like an everyman.
Yeah.
He was this bigger-than-life figure, but he was just an average guy in a lot of ways.
And they all are, I mean, ultimately. But
And it's really not a totally a football story.
Mm-mm.
It is kind of a Notre Dame story, but it's the American, it's an American story.
Yeah, and what he did to the country at that particular time, he really lifted everyone up. I mean, it was
him and Will Rogers.
Yeah.
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 So it was it was a pleasure to be a part of, and obviously, you know, the biggest thing I'd ever done. And,
did you get a chance to play it at Notre Dame?
No, I think they wanted to bring it downtown first, and it just didn't work out, and but they're still working on it.
Yeah.
And Tony and Libby really want that thing to fly, and I think it will someday. I really do.
I do too. And I know that once you hit Broadway, even with a show like that,
mm-hmm.
you're becomes an $8-10 million show.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, it was expensive here. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine how they, you know, I'm sweating bullets over what we're doing, and that money is, I mean, that's crazy. So.
But the material will hold up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Mike wrote some beautiful songs for that show. David wrote the book, and
it had such high energy. I mean, some of the football formations that turned into almost dance routines. And it was very clever.
It was great. Well, and Buddy Farmer, who wrote the book too, he, you know, he has a lot of knowledge about Rocky and met the family and was a football player. So he was able to sort of bring that to the table. So,
well, I think, you know, the success of Jersey Boys had a lot to do with bringing males back into theater. And I think Rocky would have that same appeal.
It's absolutely.
Just, we just got to have a director or a producer, an angel.
Yes.
That has that belief.
Well, yeah, and we had a couple of angels on this show for sure on High Fidelity. So it does take angels, and it takes people that believe in you. And, you know, I think High Fidelity is the kind of show that guys are going to come see it. Whenever I mention it, then, oh, I love that movie. Guys love that movie.
Yeah, they do.
And it's such a guy story. But, you know, girls go to see musicals. I mean, traditionally, I mean, guys and girls both go. But if you're talking about the male market, and that's what we're talking about here, guys will come and see the show, and they will have a great time.
So that's good. Yeah. Well, you tell them there's a bar, and you tell them there's some good music in it.
Yeah.
Then the girl doesn't have to take them kicking and screaming.
That's right.
Because how often that happens, and then when they get through, they love the show.
They love it.
But
yeah.
with this show, it has that direct appeal.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to do. We bring it, you know, the name of the movie is going to get them in, and then we're going to blow them away with the show. I mean, that's really what we're trying to do, and I think we're going to do that, so.
Well, you sound very, very confident.
Yeah. Hey, well, what else can you be, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's
well, when you put this much effort into
the
show.
Yeah, you got it. You got to go for it. So,
and so it's going to open on August 17th.
Mm-hmm.
And
previews start August 8th.
August 8th. And it's amazing you're doing a show like this for under $40 a ticket.
Yeah. I mean, we had a lot of discussion about the ticket pricing, you know. Yeah, we want to recoup our investment and all other stuff, but you know, at the end of the day, if it's too expensive, people aren't going to come. And in this economy, you know, with the other shows that we're competing with, we just felt like price point wise, you know, $40 is a good top ticket price. They're going to feel like they're getting a great deal, and you know, we'll sell more tickets and hopefully stay open longer.
Well, just go back to Xanadu that opened here, $88 for a one-act show. That, you know, for $7 more, you could see Jersey Boys or Wicked.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just insanity.
No way.
Yeah.
There's no way.
That's very smart marketing, and that means you care about your audience,
too. Of course. I mean, the audience is everything. If they don't come, I mean, it's like, you know, I always say if an actor falls in the woods, I mean, you know, if you don't have them, you don't have anything. So you got to get them in the door, and they'll love the show, but you got to get them in the door.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's that, and I'm sure there'll be other incentives, but under $40 for Saturday night show, so for a date show. And
you can get
dinner
food
pack,
there. You can get drinks. Everything's in one spot. You know, it's great.
Yeah, that's getting to be a trend.
Yeah,
and we need that in the city. We get that in the suburbs.
Yeah.
Marriott has it, Drury Lane, and Theater at the Center.
Well, and look how successful they are.
Yeah.
There's a reason why they're the top three in the city, and they've been open as long as they have.
But other than some shows at Water Tower, we need that niche, because the only other show as we talked about before was Million Dollar Quartet, which, by the way, the audience for that show has got to come see your show.
Yeah.
Same basic audience.
Yeah, I mean, if they love seeing the actors on stage playing the songs and singing them at the same time, they're going to love this show.
Yeah,
I mean, we're doing it straight on with microphones and just, you know, we're having a great time. People are going to have fun.
They're going to great. So tell us now what's the future's going to be for you and for Route 66.
Oh,
now
okay.
You're off to a wow. You're off to a great start. Talk about starting out running.
I mean, yeah, well, you know, we are thinking about the future, of course. You know, we're just trying to get this thing done first. But we do a weekly, monthly reading series at Murphy's Irish Bistro, which is on Lincoln, two blocks south of Irving Park. In the upstairs there, we do a free reading series.
When is that?
It's
go to
our
website,
right? Which is www.route66theatre.org. And you sign up for the mailing list, and you'll get an e-blast that'll tell you when we're doing it, what the play is. And we've done four of them now, and we did a new play by Lisa Dillman that was incredible, and she's a company member for Route 66 we want to do. And then last week we did this play called McMeekin Finds Out by Scott Barsotti that was great.
So these are new works.
Yeah, new works.
So that's what you want to kind of stay with?
Well, you know, we're taking it one project at a time. I mean, obviously, you know, On an Average Day and High Fidelity have both been done before, but we decided to do them. So it's really a case-by-case basis, and something that does fit into our mission, you know, that fits into sort of the Americana, you know, the open road. I can't name our mission statement off the top of my head, but, you know, something, you know, you see Route 66 road sign, and it gives you
Americana, the open road, and kind of redefining and defining what it is to be an American.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, we'll see, but these are a couple of plays that we're really taking a hard look at for next year. And
well, we need new plays.
Yes, yeah. We do. Yeah. We've got a couple of great playwrights in Lisa Dillman and Scott Barsotti for sure. And, you know, the only thing is these things take money. I mean, that's the thing that people, they don't realize that how, you know, you can have the greatest plans in the whole world, but you got to go out and get the money to execute them. And
it is a much tougher sell for a new play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're working on it, and hopefully High Fidelity will do well for us. And
If that could be your cash cow show, because every group needs that out of practicality. Then that gives you the budget and to experiment and to try some what I call art pieces that you have to establish an audience.
Or if you're the House Theater, who are incredible, you know, they had their art piece, The Sparrow, become their cash cow. So, you know, it's possible to do both. But I just, you know, hopefully High Fidelity will do that for us, and we can explore some new works, which we like to do. I mean,
does that mean you're going to be spending more time in Chicago?
Well, you know, my son is here, so there's no way that I'll be being, you know, in LA full time. I'll definitely, Chicago's my home, and it's, you know, it's my favorite city in the whole world, and I'll always be here for a second. I wouldn't mind going to LA for the winter and doing a little work out there.
Yeah,
but I'll always be in Chicago.
Well, and as long as the show runs, you're going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'll stay here. You don't close a hot show, so hopefully it will run for a long time.
Well, there's a lot of buzz on this show.
Thanks.
And your timing can't be better.
Well, let's hope, you know, knock on wood. Well, you know, I'm just focused on making the show great right now. You know, being an actor as well. I mean, I'm trying to juggle all the hats, but the most important hat right now is just actors. So,
but you don't, being the producer and being the star of the show, how does that work?
It's I don't recommend it. it's very tough, but at the same time, you know, I've lived with this piece now for over a year. I really feel like I have a good understanding of it. And you know, you kind of look at what John Cusack did with actually writing the script that he was. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, writing and playing.
I mean, thank God we have these brilliant creators that, you know, gave us the piece and we're just executing it. But you know, that's a guy that wrote the script, he picked the music, he did everything. And, you know, I mean, yeah, what I'm doing is a huge undertaking, but at the end of the day, I get to turn myself over to Peter Amster and be in his hands. I get to turn myself over to the material. I get to just be with these other actors and, you know, put the producing hat on when I get done. So it works
out. So it's either before or after. But once you're on stage, you're Peter's guy, right?
The phone goes on, you know, silent, and I put it away. And but, yeah. Absolutely. And I love it when I get to that point. I mean, the rehearsals have been a blast. And, you know, so I like being able to put the phone away and just be the actor, because it's a great role.
Well, we're looking forward to it.
Thanks, Tom.
And, folks, make sure you see this High Fidelity, because the buzz, it's got all the ingredients. Top talent, good script, based on a cult movie. And in a small, intimate theater, and I've been to that space. That's a tremendous space. And I understand you guys have improved it a little
bit. Wait till you see what we did with it. I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible. The lights, the sets. Angie Weber Miller, our scenic designer, has really transformed the whole space into a club. I mean, you're going to feel like you're going to a concert. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Steph. This was terrific. And folks, remember, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of August 10th, 2009. Second City, the timeless producer of improvisational-based comedy, celebrates its milestone 50th anniversary the weekend of December 11th through the 13th. It'll be marked by a series of events that will bring together alumni, recreate famous sketches and characters, and bring the history of the Second City to life. Some of the weekend highlights include the SCTV reunion, a benefit for the Second City Alumni Fund featuring Eugene Levy, Andrea Martin, Catherine O'Hara, Harold Ramis, Martin Short, Dave Thomas, and other special guests. Tickets and showtimes will be announced in the coming weeks. Beginning as a small cabaret theater on Chicago's North Side back in 1959, the Second City has grown to become a comedy empire, with resident theaters here in Chicago, in Toronto, and in Los Angeles. Second City currently enrolls over 3,000 students in its training organizations. The Second City is also launching their 50th anniversary microsite this week. That means that you can find alumni photos, videos, and audio clips at www.secondcity.com/50. Again, that's secondcity.com/50. David Shiner's new Cirque du Soleil show, coming to Chicago this fall, is currently rehearsing in Montreal, and the show's title has not been announced. But don't worry, that will be heard after Labor Day. The show will open at the Chicago Theater on December 2nd, and individual tickets will be available this September. So stay tuned here to Theater in Chicago News to find out the name of David Shiner's new Cirque du Soleil show. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Steph Tovar for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And I would also like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.